We present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took. Welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a notice from the Institute of Health Managers, read by Peter Donaldson.
Please note that the specialist management seminar, Down with Paper, has been cancelled. This is due to the delay in publishing the report on reducing unnecessary bureaucracy in the NHS.
It's if no, if you seek it. Thank you, John Hindle of Harrogate, for sending us that. Now let's meet the team. So you welcome first, on my right, author, humorist and father, Andy Hamilton, and first time on, broadcaster, novelist, Jonathan Meads. Facing them, on my left, Times columnist and oldest inhabitant of the news quiz, Alan Corran, and brilliant entertainer, Tony Hawkes. Well, we go into the first question, and it's for you, Andy, and it's this. Who opted to labour the opting out point?
Well, presumably, this is a question about new improved Labour PLC, sponsored by British Telecom. Because there was a lot of trouble at the conference, wasn't it? Because that awful left-wing rabble-rouser, Red Roy Hattersley,
yes,
got up and sort of denounced the right-wing lackeys that were running the Labour Party and made an impassioned plea for comprehensive education and equal rights of schooling, you know, which I'm sure we all remember him sticking up for so very hard. I think he got through his whole speech without mentioning Sheffield Wednesday once. And would that be it? The controversy
exactly
over schooling?
It. Yes, absolutely right. This was the Labour conference disharmony over education policy. Roy Hattersley challenged David Blunkett from the floor, saying state schooling should stay at Westland Security. Fortunately, the two rows in front of him had their umbrellas up. Labour have pledged schooling will be provided without examination of intellectual ability. And why not? The system works all right for the Shadow Cabinet. Jonathan, welcome to the programme. Your question is this. Whose sleepless nights are over thanks to what the papers said?
This will be Jeff Knights, who a generation ago would, I suppose, have described himself as a company director and now calls himself a consultant. And his partner, or sparring partner, is Gillian Tailforth. And Jeff has to suffer a lot. He suffers pancreatitis.
Is that right?
His partner, come nurse, is capable of ministering to his inflamed, indeed inflated, pancreas. The latest thing was a bit of a barney with a taxi driver called Martin. So the trial which resulted from the alleged assault took place in Harrow, where Mr. Justice someone or other stayed the proceedings on account of the bad publicity that Jeff had got in the tabs, one of which had described him as a beast ender. And I don't think we knew before that Jeff was interested in animals.
We'll rush past that point.
The point is, of course, should he transgress in the future, can he ever get a fair trial?
Yes, of course. This refers to the trial of Jeff Knights, abandoned by the judge because of prejudicial reports, mainly in The Mirror, The Mail and Boxing Weekly. One editor said that the judge's attitude was patronising, as most jurors can quite easily distinguish between newspaper reports and the truth. Now, Tony, nice to have you back with us. Your question is, who had a go on behalf of the have-a-goes?
Oh, well, this would be a question about Michael Howard.
It would be.
At the police chief's conference, he implied that police officers were being rather overzealous in the way that they were pursuing people who were defending their own property. These people called the have-a-goes, I think, or have-a-go heroes or something.
That's right.
Perfectly reasonable people, like Ted Newbury, who from Ilkeston in Derbyshire, who, when he saw someone trying to break into his garden shed, did what any of us would have done, and got out a 12-bore shotgun, attempting to blow him to smithereens.
It was also suggested this week that MI5 might help the police. Due to a slight typing error, Mr. Howard employed MFI by mistake. The very first defendant was badly fitted up. And the case fell apart. Alan, Alan, here, to your great surprise, is a piece of music.
And although this is a fight I can lose, the accused is an innocent man. I am an innocent man. Oh, yes, I am an innocent man.
I think we tread softly here, Alan. That was An Innocent Man by Billy Joel. And the question is he an innocent man?
Well, this is very difficult to answer because he is innocent as a result of having 400 lawyers at £3 million each. I have nothing. I have a small solicitor in Winchmore Hill who will be wiped out by people like that. So I shall take it very carefully. I think this refers to... at a guess, this refers to have-a-go hero O.J. Simpson. as of tonight. Has pledged himself to finding the man who killed his wife and her friend, Mr. Goldman. This will be a lifetime's search for him, and enormously difficult, involving waking up every morning, looking in the shaving mirror and thinking... funny eyes. I won't go on, but whether this is progress in American jurisprudence, I really don't know, but this man was declared innocent.
Well, he did at one stage at the trial, he actually said that he declared himself totally 100% innocent. It's quite difficult to be 67% innocent. It's not a double murder, isn't it?
Was the trial of O.J. Simpson, which took over a year to present evidence and just 4 hours to find the defendant not poor. The former footballer and actor is set to make millions from his acquittal, including the film of the trial called 12 Friendly Men. At least some things remain traditional and sacrosanct, and it's the scores at the end of the first round of the news quiz, which are, as always, for all. We start round two with a story from London Zoo's Life Watch magazine.
In May, London Zoo held an exhibition at the House of Commons to highlight the zoo's work. MPs were encouraged to adopt an animal on behalf of their colleagues. And here are some of the more interesting results. Paddy Ashdown, a goat. Tony Blair, a puff adder. Virginia Bottomley, a barefaced curassow. John Gummer, a fairy lorikeet. David Meller, a pyjama cardinal. Margaret Thatcher, a lappet-faced vulture.
Absolutely genuine, by the way, and thank you, Susan Mackay of London, for sending us that. Andy, your question again. Why are we, in heavy quotes, planning to share time at sale time?
Sale time? Is this to do with the Royal Yacht,
yes,
Britannia? There's a dispute. I think Greenwich think that they should have the Britannia moored up in their manor, so that they, the Maritime Museum, so that they can charge Americans, you know, £50 and tell them that it's where Nelson died.
Nelson Rockefeller, that is.
And I think Portsmouth feel that it should stay down there, and I don't know. I think that we could all put in a bid for having it in our backyard. But it's because it's being phased out of service, because apparently just sailing it sort of a few times around the globe with a couple of people in it wasn't very good value for money.
This is the proposal to operate a replacement for the Royal Yacht Britannia on a timeshare basis with non-members of the family. Whenever the royals aren't on board, their wives can use it. The idea is to fund the building of the new yacht by using it for training purposes, like showing Marines how to engage in heavy action on beaches. They'll sit on board watching videos of Fergie's holidays. Jonathan, your question again. Who learned to see red at the pretense of a blue?
Is it to do with the false colleges which are being set up all over the place?
One of them, yes.
Well, there are two now.
Are there two?
Yeah, there's one called Warnborough College, which claims to be connected to Oxford University. And there's a new and interesting one called Islington University, which is a bedsit in Hackney. Where a lady called Sonia, someone, was paid £200 to forward mail from America. Yeah, lots of hick kids from universities in Tulsa and places were conned into thinking they were going to Oxford University to get a degree. Of course, there are lots of people who've done very well by going to Oxford University and not getting a degree, like my Lord Archer, who probably actually is an alumnus of Wallenborough College. No one quite knows.
Tony, time for music. Have a listen to this.
With a bit of a mind flip,
you're into the time slip,
and nothing can ever be the same.
You're spaced out on sensation,
like you're under sedation.
Best new time of the year. Best new time of the year.
From the Rocky Horror Show, Time Warp. And your question is, how might we come back to this question in the future?
Well, any way you like. I'm answering it now. I think this is a question about Stephen Hawking.
Right.
Because he's actually giving some credence now to the theory that he previously ridiculed time travel. But he now reckons that if you kind of combine, Einstein's general theory of relativity with quantum theory, that you can actually travel in time. And I've actually believed this for years, ever since I was born, 3,000 years ago, to a family of cave-dwelling hunters just outside Stonehenge. And it is a possibility, I suppose. In a sense, in a small, infinitesimal way, we all travel in time a little bit every time we put the clocks back, don't we?
What?
Solid grasp of Einstein.
Yeah, I think so. But I think what he's referring to is greater time travel, like the sort of things that Doctor Who used to do, or they did in Back to the Future. I've always thought that since Back to the Future is actually a film about time travel, I always thought that Back to the Future 3 should have been released first.
Yes, you're allowed to applaud him, it's
well,
all right.
I'm trying to grasp this.
Yeah.
We haven't discovered it yet, how to travel in time. But when in the future they discover how to travel in time, they will be here.
Mm.
How do we know they're not here now?
Well,
you were 3,000 years ago.
Well,
I know you're not from...
Well, I dotted around a few times, haven't I? I don't just do it once. This is my holiday at the moment.
I mean, were you from the future, you'd be able to tell me things like, you know, how much fags are going to go up and whether Blair will get in.
It's very bad news for the National Lottery, isn't it? Well, I think we should look at it really positively, because I think it'd be fantastic to be able to, because I'm sure we'd all pick, you know, moments where you could go back and you could stop the bullet that started the First World War. You could go back, you could, you know, to the 1920s in Grantham and lower and find a way of lowering Councillor Thatcher's sperm count. I mean, it would be amazing human potential.
It was Stephen Hawking who agreed that time travel may be possible. That means we could go back and stop ourselves from wasting 20 quid on that bloody awful book of his that no one ever finished. Although it isn't quite possible yet to go back, a system has been discovered that makes time stand still. It's called Good Morning with Anne and Nick. Alan, what growing force has uniform ideas?
I saw this sub-headline in the Telegraph, and I think Monday, saying MOD orders first maternity smocks. And I think this is about pregnant armed forces. This is something from the future, indeed. Because apparently the Army and the Navy and the Air Force are all getting pregnant. And in order for them to go into battle effectively, they're going to have to wear these wonderful maternity flak jackets, which will stretch under pressure. I don't know any more of it than that. And why how many of the MOD knows it has to order, unless it's travelled in time, how many of its frontline soldiers are going to get pregnant between now and then? Over the top, as these wonderful women carefully ease one knee over the top of the redoubt and start ambling towards no man's land, saying, "Oh, me back." That's what's happening. I mean,
I'm thinking of the drill sergeant on parade. Pregnant women, right, if I.
Yes, I thought, pregnant women to step forward, not so fast, you know.
Anyway, it is the Ministry of Defence who are to introduce maternity wear uniforms for the Army. So far, only the Navy has placed an order, and not from a female unit, it says here, and the scores at the end of the second round are still tied at 8-8. We start round three with some news from the St. Albans Observer.
Hospital chiefs plans to build a body store and viewing chapel next to a restaurant dining room at St. Albans City Hospital have been condemned by staff as tasteless.
Thank you, and Britain of St. Albans for spotting that. Andy, what blue song earned the boys the red card?
I think this is a story about a school's football match where perhaps a slightly pedantic referee went into the dressing room after the game and sent all the boys off, even though they were already off, because they'd been singing an abusive song about him. Unfortunately, none of the papers I read contained the lyric of the abusive song. But there are loads of rude songs you can sing about refs, aren't there? And you can get them on KTEL discs and stuff. So I think it's that he showed them all the red card, and the parents were a bit miffed, you know. But of course, have you seen parents on the touchline at schools football matches? You know, I'm sure they're very balanced people. And that was it, I think. And,
yes,
and presumably, these 12, 11-year-olds are all doing community service. I don't know.
These are the 12-year-old footballers who were shown the red card after the match when they began singing rude songs about the referee, as you so rightly say. That's terrible, picking on a myopic individual without a father. The boys of Cromarsh under-13s were disciplined after a game that was so ill-tempered that players were stretchered onto the pitch. Tony, who landed in trouble while aiming to go Deutsch?
Right, well, I think this is a story about...
You know it is.
Okay, I'm absolutely dead certain that this is a story about a jumbo jet flying from Detroit, Northwest Airlines, I think. It's supposed to be flying from Detroit to Frankfurt, and the flight went smoothly. It landed. It was an excellent landing. It was so smooth, in fact, that all the passengers burst into a spontaneous round of applause. Only problem was it was Brussels instead of Frankfurt, and they were a bit miffed about this, as they might be. But instead of letting the pilot just take them on this short distance to Frankfurt, Northwest Airlines grounded the pilot angrily and the crew and sent another crew out from America. So they had to wait 7 hours before they could get there. They could have driven there in an hour and a half. But at least the landing went well, so they applauded. I think it's interesting when people do applaud when a plane lands, because what they're really doing there is applauding because they're not dead, aren't they? In that sense, I suppose it's the same reason why people applaud at the end of Neil Sedaka concerts.
Although the jury's still out on that one, aren't they?
Their bags actually went to the right airport, apparently.
That's right.
First time ever. First time ever in the history of an airline.
Alan, your question now. What gadgetry can drive you to a breakdown?
There are a lot of stories about mobile phones this week. This is one of them, isn't it?
Well,
the mobile phone is draining the batteries of cars.
That's right.
The thing about mobile telephones, people leave it in, switched on, just in case. You never know. She may ring up. She may have had enough of calling. I mean, if you... If you have a woman who trawls the intersex highway that Tony Blair's so keen on looking for little friends, then if you've got any sense, you're sitting there in the company grenade and you're keeping your phone on. As a result of this, your battery goes flat. That's a thing that can often happen in the presence of the woman I'm discussing. As a result of this, the AA are being constantly called out. Not to her. I mean, I haven't known her. She may have a thing about those tight, shiny boots and the Sam Brown belt, but they're being called out to motor cars with flat batteries and worn-out mobile phones.
That's right.
There goes the knighthood again. No, probably not these days, actually. Might be worth an MBE if he's listening.
This is the news that the boom in electronic gadgets is leading to a record number of car breakdowns as batteries are drained. One Skoda Turbo owner was... One Skoda Turbo owner was left stranded after he lit a cigarette. The worrying increase has led to a call for a return to traditional in-car entertainments, I Spy, Travel Scrabble, Gillian Tailforth, and the scores... at the end of round three, it's still tied at 12 all. It's amazing. Before we start the final round, here's an item spotted by Stephen O'Loughlin of Huddersfield.
A man obsessed with taking his girlfriend on holiday to Spain paid for the trip by robbing three banks in the 24 hours before his flight left. But detectives were waiting to arrest him when the couple flew back to Britain. In the first hold-up, the desperate robber had given the cashier a note demanding money, but he'd used a piece of paper with his name and address on the back.
Well, thank you, Stephen Loughlin, for that. Andy, will you have a listen to this? Be revealed in a moment. Question is, who didn't pull out the stops on the happy day?
Right, well, with that sound effect shamelessly stolen from the Goons, I think this is a story of a woman and a man, indeed, who were getting married, marching up the aisle, and the organist had had a row with the vicar about wages.
Right.
The vicar obviously had said, you know, you organists, you always, you know, you hold us over a barrel. You always...
No double entendre there.
So, you know, there had been crosswords before the ceremony. As I understand it, on the greatest day in her life, the young lady was at the end of the aisle being led down by her father, and the organist started up the wedding march and then thought, sod this, I'll teach the vicar a lesson, and just walked out. I don't know whether the vicar hummed the rest or I think it was something like that, and I don't suppose the organist was invited to the reception anyway.
This was church organist Guy Pomfret, who walked out of a wedding because he wanted his fee doubled for the ceremony to be videoed. As a result, the bride went down the aisle to the sound of silence. It was terrible. She hates Simon and Garfunkel. Fortunately, the verger is an amateur musician and offered to stand in at the end. His rendition of The Congregation in Tears, it's not often you hear Bach's Toccata and Fugue played on the spoon. Jonathan, what school took a rise and shine to the sound of alarm bells?
I don't know the name of the school, but I think it's in... is it in Newcastle?
It is in Newcastle, yeah.
Where there's a 120% truancy rate. And they thought that this wasn't really because the little charmers didn't want to go to school, but because they were so tired from sort of raves and so on every night that they couldn't get up in the morning. So the school has bought each of its pupils a £3 alarm clock to get them up and told them how to set the alarm clock so that they, you know, get up at 7:55 and they can get to school by 9:20, having done inflicted a bit of damage on cars en route.
Absolutely right. Perfectly answered. This is the school in Newcastle, which has issued its pupils with alarm clocks in an attempt to get them out of bed in the morning. The pupils had the choice between the clocks or the threat of a home visit from Michael Jackson. The clocks have proved to be so successful that many teenage pupils now claim to get up at the crack of lunch. Tony, where were arresting poses out in force?
This is an excellent story of police officers in Hong Kong who were called, I think they're known as Asia's finest because of their brilliant track record of solving crime. They've done rather too well, their anti-vice operation, because they've turned up thousands of photographs. Unfortunately, quite a lot of them are of their policemen naked. Not all of them are policemen naked. Some of them, they're in full uniform. Other ones, they're naked except for a truncheon and a helmet. And it turns out these photos are used as part of a male prostitution racket, so they think that wealthy women that for some reason want to go out with policemen. But presumably any woman that goes up to a policeman now in Hong Kong gets the policeman saying something like, hello, hello, hello. I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to accompany me to the bedroom, where anything you say will be taken down and duly photographed. You hold it, I'll flash, we'll bang, and Wallop will have a picture.
This is all about the Hong Kong police force, whose members have turned up in saucy photographs. Officers have been posing for pictures wearing only their hats and boots, complete with details of their serial numbers, height, weight, length of service. The chief of police promised he was going to remove the black sheep. You're ahead of me. They must have been in the more expensive photographs. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy, have you brought a cutting for
us? I have indeed. This is from the Daily Mail, and I just love this story for its sheer Englishness. An elderly couple were recovering from shock last night after a bullock, which tumbled off a 100-foot cliff, landed on the roof of their beach hut. Charles Jordan, 73, said, "We thought there'd been a landslide, but then we heard a moo." He and his wife, Doreen, from Hazelmere, Surrey, have been holidaying at that hut at Branscombe, Devon, for 30 years. "This won't put us off," said Mrs. Jordan. "We love it here." The bullock was unhurt.
Jonathan, what have you brought us?
I think I like this one for its sheer Germanness. A husband was discovered hiding a 3-foot Japanese sword in his trousers at his divorce hearing in Cologne. The man, who also carried a loaf, tomatoes and butter, said he was going to use the sword to make sandwiches whilst he waited for his case to come up. A report has gone to the public prosecutor.
Thank you very much indeed. Tony.
I've got a clipping here from the Farnham Herald. The bar manager said that he'd been forced into the £1 entrance fee because of the number of students and young people coming to the bar and requesting pint after pint of water without spending a penny.
Alan.
Well, in the week of the New Labour conference, Barry, I have an item to gladden the heart of Tony. It's from the Yorkshire Post. And it says, "The Barnsley coat of arms has been updated. Its glass worker no longer wears a cloth cap, and the string around the miner's trousers has been removed."
Thank you all. Let's look at the final score. Well, there's no mystery in the fact that it's been a tie all the way through, and that's the way it's remained. 16 all. Well done, everyone. So, what can I say? Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Curran, Andy Hamilton, Tony Hawkes and Jonathan Meads. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Aled Evans.